Hello everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Contact Lost, the best Polish English speaking podcast about Warhammer 40k competitive scene, I guess. I'm sure. Anyway, I'm Tweak, your host today. No Joker, but he will join us for the next episodes, I'm sure. Today we start a new series of episodes. The series is going to pertain to the World Team Championships. I don't know if you know, but we are going to be doing the studio coverage of that from Belgium, or while in Belgium, in Mechelen, right there with the guys playing the game. So we will be delivering all the latest news and so on. But since we are starting a new series requires a special guest. And the guest, you can see the guest on the screen already. You've seen the title of the episode, but I need to do the proper introduction. So today I give you, well, let me start with this. They say that John Lennon from The Art of War is the boy king. Now, today, I give you the man king. I give you the king of kings. The Rex Mundi. I give you Lord Liam of the House Hackett. Hello. Welcome.
My word. That sounded like the opening of like a magnum opus or some sort of like narcissistic bibliography or something.
If you were a lady, I would call you Khaleesi, but you know, I cannot go there. So.
No, thanks for that. That was awesome.
All right. So welcome to the show. I brought you in for the obvious reason that might not be obvious to all the listeners, because I assume there will be people who have not heard of the WTC. There will be people who, obviously have not been to the WTC. So I invited you and I called you the king, my liege, sire, because last year you managed to win both the singles event at the World Team Championships and the team championship as well. So you took both trophies home. I don't know if that has ever happened before, but yeah, I forgot to check that. But how did that feel? So let's start with this. Like, you know, have you been basking in the sun of glory and so on for the entire year? Or
I think probably the more important thing, rather than winning, was the fact that any photos or videos of me following WTC was basically photos of a corpse, because of how fatigued I appeared. There was actually a large number of memes about that. You know, the TV show for kids, Arthur, where like there's a particular like picture of he's got like the big bags around his eyes. There's a photo of me where I look like Arthur in that photo. I was honestly completely shattered, because you know, it's 8 or so games of singles 40k, no days break if you play the finals, and then 7 days of seven rounds of team 40k, for a total of 15 games of competitive 40k and 4 hour rounds over something like 5.5-6 days. And that is I've got to be honest, that is a monumental like endurance feat.
It takes a toll, I'm sure.
So after WTC and a week of sleeping, it's actually a lie. I went back to work the day I landed. So that was pretty rough. But no, it was obviously the highlight of, you know, my time playing 40K. I thought it was really privileged in general to go, without, I guess, digressing too much. For the Aussies to go to WTC is actually like, you know, it's literally a cross-world journey. There's very few places that we can go that are further away than Europe for us. You know,
it costs an arm and a leg as well. So
yeah, it's about a $5,000 Australian dollar trip, and it's a 32-hour journey, you know, to get there. So the whole way home was obviously flying high, metaphorically and literally. It was awesome. Yeah. And I think I was really privileged in the sense that we'd been trying really, really hard for a really long time, you know, without, I guess, being crass or anything like that, to make Aussie 40K be respected, I think. You know, we've always thought that we have a different take. We have a lot of really, really good players who I don't think really get recognized. And I was so happy to come back with a metaphorical trophy. There wasn't a physical trophy.
I know. That we,
with the metaphorical trophies for, you know, the singles event for myself, which was awesome, the team event, but also we won best sports as well.
Yeah, you stole that from Canada.
I'm not sure how we managed that. We are generally abrasive people. I think the best part of, you know, apart from painting, which we would never win, we won everything, which was really, really awesome.
So before we get into Team Australia, let's just talk about the WTC for a wee bit. So what makes a team of Aussies get on the plane? As you said, the price of the tickets, or the amount of money that you had to pay for the tickets, probably could feed a small village for a year. So it costs a lot. And then, you know, you go to a team event like that. You don't know whether you're going to win or lose, obviously, because the competition is quite rough. So, yeah, what drives you? Is it the WTC itself? Is there something special about it? Or is it the camaraderie with the team and you would go to the end of the world with them?
So I think it's a bit of both, probably leaning more towards the fact that, it is the WTC. So for us, I think Aussies in general, I definitely put myself in this category, think that Team 40K is the only 40K. Like, I like singles events. I enjoy playing singles events, but I think they're a secondary show to the team game, because from my perspective, this game, we love it. Look, I have far too much of my house insurance probably dedicated to covering my 40K if everything burns down. Like, I'm definitely invested, right? But the reality is that this game will never be balanced. It's never, ever going to be balanced. It's never going to be perfect. But Teams irons a lot of that stuff out. Teams is a format where, you know, you're encouraged to work together, to plan more. And at the end of the day, if the game is horrifically unbalanced, it's horrifically unbalanced for every team, because any elements you can include across factions, across teams, sorry. So we love Teams. And frankly, I think the WTC is the premier Teams event. It's having only one team from each nation sort of encourages like a hierarchical system, in the sense that like people want to level up, so to speak, to like join the team and travel, which is its whole separate ball game. I also think, on the one hand, and perhaps this is Aussie psychology, the fact that it's so far away and the fact that it's so removed from everything else in Australia is really appealing for us, because, you know, you travel as a team, you stay as a team, you drink far too many Primus beers as a team. You know, we absolutely love it, because it's almost like the ultimate boys trip in many ways, you know, and it's a really great thing to, I guess, look forward to and aspire to join. So for us, we are gluttons for WTC and Australia in general. I'm really, really happy that, you know, even in the last, I think, 4 or 5 years, Australia has adopted more and more of that WTC enthusiasm, far outside of like the top players or even the top competitive tournaments. Your friendly local gaming store, like there's a store here in Annerley near where I live that's, you know, a basement hobby shop essentially, that has WTC style terrain. And, you know, the adoption of WTC terrain, map packs, and obviously we're in a new edition now with 10th, which I'm sure we'll touch on, but, you know, in 9th, they were using the full WTC FAQ, even for like little RTTs and stuff. In fact, the only place that wasn't using WTC in my home city was the Games Workshops, the actual shop. Yeah, which is understandable. Yeah. So, you know, there is a growing, like ever-growing, ever-enhancing WTC culture here on the bottom of the world.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I remember, like a month or 2 months before the WTC, I'm a glutton for podcasts, and yours is one that I devour. Like whenever there is an episode, I immediately turn it on. I walk my dogs a lot, so there's plenty of time to listen to it. And a year ago, your podcast was not that popular in Poland. Maybe a handful of people knew who the normal blogs are. And then, you know, at some point when our team was like gathering intel and so on, I was like, dude, guys, have you heard of those guys. One, it's an amazing podcast. Like, it's fun to listen to. The people over there have amazing chemistry. And two, they really seem to know what they are talking about. So, and after the event, like, when you won, I had like 20 people come to me and say, hey, what was that podcast that you were talking about? Like, we would like to, you know, listen more to it and so on. Because now people have actually noticed that there is something else on the 40K map, global 40K map, different to the UK and the United States, and it's Australia. So
it's well very done. Far away from both of those.
It is, but, you know, skill-wise, it's, I would say, from what we have seen, it's skill-wise, ingenuity-wise, because your lists, the lists that you brought to the event, they were, like, unlike anything people have seen before, and they caught many people by surprise, which is, actually, I'll use this as a segue to one of the questions that I have. So, when I listened to your podcast last year, I think, you were talking about your preparations and the mistakes, or sorry, the lessons learned that you took away from the 2019 WTC. And one of the things that, I can't remember if it was you or Eric or someone else, someone said that, I think it was Eric, playing a game against someone in the singles event, and there was either John Lennon or someone else, maybe Sean Naden, who came to the table, sat next to the table, and was watching the entire game to try and figure out what the list does.
Yes. Yeah.
In 2022, you were smarter than that, from what I know. And you took completely different lists to singles and completely different lists to the teams event. So the question will be, people recognize you for the ingenuity, the originality of your list and so on. But this year, when we have the 10th edition, everyone will have original lists. Do you think that this takes away some edge from you, or is it actually something that you're looking forward to?
So I'm definitely the latter. I'm really, really enthusiastically looking forward to it. And the reason is this, is that I think that, true, on one hand, everyone's on a level playing field in the sense that we're all digesting the indexes and whatnot. But I also think that the simplified, not simple catchphrase means that overall, I think there will be less combos. Like if you read the indexes, it's definitely less complicated than the relics, stratagems, detachments, combos we had in the previous edition. And so I think that there will be some clear winners, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like in the context of there being some clear winners, where the Australians, I think, excel is working out the counters and the combos to the clear winners rather than just bringing the clear winners. And I'm really excited, for example, not to read an index and go, Death Watch veterans good. You know, like I'm, because like, you know, I think that's a really hot take. I'm sure Reddit will tell me all about that. But what I'm very, very excited to do is actually work out how to beat that. And I think, you know, that was and remains, but actually my favorite part of 40K. And is why I actually, even when other people are having their whole salt shakers and like throwing them around, I consistently get enthusiastic about 40K because I find everything, I see everything as a productive challenge. Like you will show me a list, and I don't know, three Wraith Knights and a whole bunch of D cannons for the new Eldar. And I look at it and I go, cool, how am I going to beat this? Because I don't go, oh, how am I going to beat this and be all sad and down about it? I genuinely ask myself the challenge, how am I going to beat this? Because I want to do it. I want to make it happen. And the Aussies in general are like that. We like taking down something that's powerful. Whether that's Wraith Knights or whether that's the United States, we like both. And from my perspective, I think that especially going into a new edition, it's a twofold boon for Aussies in the sense that now everyone's in the Aussie camp in the sense that there's no meta for people to replicate. there's
no net listing.
Exactly. I do think it's fair to say that even at the WTC, there is a reasonable amount of net listing. Right? I think that, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's more an observation that I think that there are things that are inherently powerful and that are established as having a track record. And there are teams and people who rely on those sort of armies alongside their skill to achieve results. But I think that crutch is largely taken away now. There is no net list, or there might be some, you know, preliminary net lists, but we don't know how that actually holds up. And so I think the Aussie strength is has always been adaptability, and the fact that we might rock up with eight armies that, you know, none of them are Death Watch veterans, and people mm-hmm. might, you know, people might think that's madness, but there's always a plan, you know.
Like, yeah. So taking all that into consideration, and you being the captain of the national team, if I understand correctly, you will be deeply involved in building the team, or maybe the yep. team is built already. Regardless, what is the process of getting the people? Because you mentioned that, and I mentioned that as well, like, you know, ingenuity, adaptability. Is that something that you specifically look for in your candidates, or is yeah. it more faction specialists, or is it more, you know, maybe you have so experienced players that they could take anything, give them 2 weeks, and they will be able to play literally anything, even yeah. 2 weeks before the event. So what is the process?
Whilst this might sound like I'm running for parliament, I have a pretty political answer to that question. And the answer is all of the above. So when I'm looking for candidates, especially because it was pretty clear early on that we were going to be playing 10th edition, even though WTC did a captain's vote and whatnot, I went into the team selection process even last November. I thought, obviously, with the expectation we'd be playing 10th edition. And I'm glad I did, because here we are. And because of that, player skill is incredibly important to me. Results are incredibly important to me. But more than that, I needed people who, for example, I needed people who I've always seen to be creating their own lists. Because one of the problems that I foresaw is that some of the best players, and I'm sure Australia is not unique to this, but some of the best players around are consistently playing armies that are already established, that kind of, you know, net listing with some slight adjustments. And whilst I think that's totally fine from a singles perspective, playing a team event in an entirely new edition requires psychology for you to actually sit down, read an index, and have the patience to read every profile, every special rule, every combo, like you're reading a novel.
True.
And so I selected people who, I'm not even going to use the term faction mastery anymore, not because I want to avoid the arguments that come mm-hmm. with that, but more that, you know, I think about faction enthusiasm now, because no one has mastery of any factions. 10th edition is so different. But for example, people like Chris Wright on Team Australia, he's a Marine and Eldar enthusiast. This man would sniff Kalgar's armor dust if he possibly could. And so when the rules come out for Marines and Eldar, I trust that I'm going to wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and he's already read every data sheet. He's already read every single rule that can come out. And he's not sending me that, oh, D cannons are good when you roll a six, like whoop-de-doo. What he's sending me is that you can do this awesome combo when you combine your ranges and blah, blah, blah. That's the stuff that I miss. And so I'm looking for people with faction enthusiasm, adaptability, and also, sure, like individual player skill. But I actually think that third point, the individual player skill, is arguably the least relevant. Because I don't know about you, Tweak, but I've played a couple of games of 10th edition. I know we don't have really points yet, but mm-hmm. I've played a couple of games and I feel like the training wheel's on in the sense that, like, I don't, the muscle memory of the things I used to do is all gone.
Yeah, because, you know, everything is so fresh, everything is so new, everything is so different. But again, I'll use what you just said as a segue to another question, because I haven't played a game of 10th yet, simply because of lack of time. But I do follow a lot of podcasts, I do follow shit ton of YouTube channels as well. So I saw some games. I just finished watching I think Vanguard Tactics playing Sisters versus Death Guard, because I wanted to check out Death Guard, which is like my go-to army, has been recently. But most of those channels look at the game from the perspective of singles. So they look yes. at the game from the perspective of, you know, how do I perform individually? how do you think will 10th play out for teams? So there are, you know, there are so many aspects that need to be taken into account. How are you approaching this as a captain's team?
So how I'm approaching it, I suppose, is in a reasonably flowcharty kind of manner, in the sense that there are some basic questions that I don't yet have answers to. And by that, I mean, like, what the overall damage profiles of things look like, how killy is stuff in general, how durable is stuff in general. You know, to put it in perspective, like, I played a game literally yesterday, Thousand Suns versus Space Marines. And we basically found that something like 60% of our damage was mortal wounds both ways. But both Space Marines with like Onslaught Gatling cannons that all do mortal wounds on sixes, and then Thousand Suns, where like everything seems to do mortal wounds on sixes. So I'm still trying to establish where my baseline is. And I say that because, for example, if we work out that, you know, so many things do mortals, but infantry are particularly vulnerable to it, I can perceive this addition being a more mechanized addiction. Where definitely an addiction as well, but not quite the one we're talking about. So in terms of team like construction and how 10th is going to look, there's a lot of unknowns. I don't think I can really answer that question with much like veracity, I suppose. I think that from what I've seen from the data sheets, the way damage works, and I would argue the extremes of durability and damage, which, despite the fact that I think Games Workshop explained that it was going to be like a less killy addition, I think that there are things that are, for example, some of the profiles, if you put into 9th edition, would instantly be the best weapon in the edition, like straight away. I think that it's going to be a really polarizing edition of 40K. I think that there's more of a role in teams for skew armies than ever before. And I also think that the one thing that I can't answer yet, that's a really big unknown for Team Australia, and I'm presuming the world, in terms of WTC, is the terrain. Because the terrain rules are vastly different. Arguably more interactive slash more restrictive, depending on how you look at it. And how we approach that, and even list design, full stop, is going to vary wildly depending on the terrain rules. Simple things like Demon Princes. I mean, with the changes to how fly works, you can't just put a Demon Prince in the corner of a ruin and fly it over. So does that mean, for example, I'm probably going to want to take more infantry sorcerers as a Thousand Suns player than Demon Princes, because they're way more mobile, just because they can move through ruins? We don't know yet.
And you can hide them in units as well.
Exactly. We don't know. There's so many unknowns. We don't know if WTC will play bottom floor blocked, as has been rumored. We don't know if WTC are going to have triangle bases or square bases on their ruins. We don't know if they'll have any bases on their ruins. We don't know the density of the terrain, and so on and so forth. So in terms of a team's lineup and a team's dynamic, I think the game is going to be very polarizing, but there's so many unanswered questions. Tom, I really, I guess, every day, you know, refreshing the Warhammer community page, being like, give me more rules. And I go to the WTC captain's page and I'm like, give me more rules. Like, you know, I feel like at this point I'm rattling my phone, wanting to get more info out of it, but I just can't.
Yeah, we all are. But I guess, and that a little bit off-putting bit, I mean, on one hand, off-putting, on the other hand, many people are probably looking forward to it, is the release date, designer's commentary, FAQ, name it, because there are so many questions right now. You know, damage reduction to zero, fly, has someone made a mistake, or is it actually supposed to work like that? And so many more. So we'll see whether this turns everything upside down. But let's focus on the things that are tangible, that we can that we can see. So first of all, do you feel that the amount of time that you have as a team to prepare is just right, too short, or, you know, I guess there's no other choice, but do you think you have sufficient time to actually prepare for an event of that magnitude?
That's a good question. I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to say yes because of probably two, maybe three things, depending on how rambly I get. The first is that there's actually almost no singles events between like now for us and WTC. Because of that, I think all of my players can put 110% of their time and effort into WTC. And I think realistically, like, I think by Monday, after all the indexes and points dropped, I'll have I'll have probably about 16 or so lists in my inbox. Mm-hmm. I think the enthusiasm of the Aussies is really high and the energy is really high, especially with some of the new players we've brought to the team this year. I'm really proud of how enthusiastic and energetic they are. I also think that the lack of singles events plays into, I guess, this narrative, whether it's true or not, time will tell, that the Aussies thrive in an environment where we can like innovate and come up with new things. The fact that there's no singles events means there's nothing for anyone to copy. It's all got to be kind of from the ground up construction of lists and indeed a team. So I actually feel like those two factors play a positive role for us. The last thing as well is that for me anyway, apart from a few temp games, I haven't played a 40K game since April. I actually just, when I knew 10th was coming and WTC was coming, I focused on fundraising and getting ready for 10th. And there's a couple
and going
of,
on holidays.
Oh yeah, that's true. And going on my honeymoon as well, which is nice.
Exactly.
If you heard that, it's my wife wooing in the background. I think that for me anyway, I have a lot of banked energy for 10th edition, and I know a couple of the guys are in the same boat, so we might only have a couple of weeks to work out a team, but I can play like six games a week, so it's going to be an intense period, that's for sure.
Yeah, at that level it always is, so it comes as no surprise. So again, focusing on the things that are at hand's reach, Poland as a country is mm-hmm. used to, I mean, you know, has a long history of going to the ETC/WTC. So Polish
highest
players,
on average ratings for a team. Yep.
Yeah. Let's not go there. I just wanted to focus on, you know, that little bit that we played through multiple editions and multiple systems, like, you know, submission systems, like the 9th edition or 8th edition ITC style missions. But people are also used to playing Maelstrom of War, like it was the bread and butter, yeah, at some point. Other teams like Team America, for example, I imagine, who historically have been playing ITC for a longer while, I guess they had to put in some extra effort into preparing for the WTC, yeah, because they were not accustomed to using cards. How does that look with your team? I mean, are your players experienced in using cards? Is the mission system going to take you by surprise, or are we already, you know, data crunching it and already getting familiarized with it?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think it's quite nostalgic for a lot of Aussies. Like, you know, as you mentioned before, my first international 40K tournament was the ETC in Serbia in 2019, and that was, of course, a Maelstrom of War event. It, you know, WTC included that. I have, you know, to be perfectly honest, lusted after Maelstrom cards and player placed objectives for the entirety of 9th edition. I think at least once a tournament, I've just had my grumpy old man moment where I've been like, oh, I miss when I used to be able to place down objectives.
Old man yells at cloud, basically.
you damn kids and your 15 inches, 10 inches from the board edge objectives. Anyway, and I think that, you know, this edition, it kind of is my wish list in many ways. There's a lot of different primaries with, I believe, two of them where you can place the objective. So not everything I wanted, but a little bit. And the Maelstrom cards, I would argue, are the best they've ever been. You have quite a bit of control over them. There's only like 15 of them. So, you know, it's a bit more predictable and able to be tracked. And from my perspective, you know, I can confirm that 7 out of 8 of the Australian players have played ETC style missions in the past extensively. Right. The last fellow is more new to 40K. So from that perspective, I don't think they're surprised at all.
Okay. So how about, again, we're I want to, what's the expression? Beat on the topic of predictability? No, I'll stick to
strike
the
iron while it's hot?
Perhaps, okay, never mind. Predictability. Let's focus on that, because you said that with the cards, there is an amount of things that you can do to make them more predictable.
Yep.
But then, again, as a captain, during the games, you'll probably want to know how the games are going. How many points people can bring from those games, because that's the usual thing that the captain does. Don't you think that the predictability at a team's event is going to be in a much different place than it used to be? Because one, randomness of the missions, two, battle shocked, which to me seems like something that could completely turn around, a turn or even a game. Because suddenly you don't score objectives, suddenly you lose a unit because you cannot use a protective stratagem on them or something.
Yep.
And then you also have the gambits that I don't know if anyone is going to use, but they are there and they could also swing the game that way or yep. that way. So how are you going to tackle this?
So another very good question. I suppose I'll start with the second half of your question first, how are we going to tackle this? And the problem at the moment, we can't. I say that because we're playing a new edition and everything's in flux. We don't know at WTC if the brackets are going to be the same. Like in ninth edition, it was 0 to 5 points was a draw. And then every 5 points after that was 11, 9, 12, 8, so on and so forth. We don't know if those brackets are going to stay the same. And so being able to track games or at least, spot variance, I suppose, in our predicted scores is not possible because we currently don't have the metric to measure games by. For argument's sake, if it stays the same, let's say 0 to 5, I agree with you that I think there's more room for swing. But I also think it's kind of interesting. I've only played a couple of games, so please bear in mind that everything I'm saying now might be proven in time to be completely ridiculous. And
I'll take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, but most of the missions are all just 5 objective missions in the standard sweep and clear layout, right? 15 inches from the short board edge and 10 from the long board edge. Now, because there's 5 objectives, Battleshock, it was interesting. Battleshock is impactful, but because you only do Battleshock checks in your own command phase, and you always have a CP in your own command phase, you always get one at the start of your command phase, I found that you're mainly playing over those 3 objectives in the middle, unless you're crushing your opponent or getting crushed. And so whenever you fail to check on one of those middle objectives, you just auto-pass Battleshock. It did mean, obviously, you didn't have access for CP for other stratagems, sure. But primary is now it's more than half of the points, because it goes 50 for primary, 40 for secondaries, and 10 for paint. So if you're giving up primary to do reroll hits and wounds stratagem, you're a silly person. I think you're a silly person. So the reality is that I didn't find that Battleshock actually provided the swing that I thought it would. It more provided a CP drain, what was kind of my experience with that. In terms of how we're going to track that as we go, I think that quite a lot of work will probably have to be done on getting people used to how snowball-y primary can be. From my perspective from my games, there's a turn where even if you hold your home field objective, if your opponent holds the middle objectives, they get 20 primary points in a turn. So that theoretically means you can get the 50 points in 2.5 turns, turn 2 and turn 3. So that there is definitely a world where games can still snowball, but equally some games are quite close. I haven't quite worked out what that variance will be, but you highlighted that the tactical card system, the secondary objective system, to use GW's nomenclature, is a bit more random, so it provides some variance. It's interesting, sure, it does, but there's only 15 cards. It's not the old deck of 36 Maelstrom cards where you can draw Slay the Warlord turn 1. There's 15 cards and 3 of them can't be scored in the first battle round. So you redraw those cards if you draw them. You also have a CP to discard. And some of the mission conditions allow you to draw 3 cards, for example, and discard 1, or 3 cards and keep all 3. So from from my perspective anyway, my theory is that most good players will be approaching maximum secondary in every game that they play, and that the game will be decided by primary. My theory is that list construction and design will be flexible enough that you just do the Maelstrom cards, because they're all readily achievable, to be perfectly honest, and they're not random enough that you can't go, oh, I drew behind enemy lines, I can't do that. I mean, it's like 1 in 10 chance, right? Like, if you know, it's not particularly unreasonable. Whereas primary is going to be where the game's decided.
And how about the change to, again, I haven't read all the missions, so I
might not
be getting that right, but from what I've seen, there is at least one mission, maybe more, where you place the objectives. It's not like preset map, but you place them. Will your players, for example, know how to use that tactically to their advantage and how to, you know, counter whatever the other team is trying to do with their objectives?
So I think there's definitely a bit of refreshing to do, but again, almost all of these players are ETC experienced players from about so 4 or 5 years ago.
They've done that in the past.
You know, for me, I have longed after this for a long time. I absolutely live for the day that I win a game before we deploy armies. You know, I'm so excited for it. And I know people like Matt Morozzoli, Chris Wright, Jeremy Martino are all people who are so excited to be placing objectives again. Honestly, I think the rounds where we'll be placing objectives, because I presume there'll be some of that at WTC, you will see some very excited Aussies.
Okay. And, you know, for, again, people who might not have that much of team play experience, WTC is, well, most of the tournaments, like 8-man tournaments, although there are not so many of them in the world, they have this system where when you do your pairing with the other team, you know who's playing who, or, well, you're attempting to establish that who will be playing who. What you need to take into consideration is like the structure of terrain on the tables, because there are tables that are very terrain dense, and then there are tables that have, well, not little terrain, but there are, you know, shooting alleys that you can take advantage of if you play like a shooty army, for example. Do you know, because I don't, but do you know whether the WTC is planning to do something like this in this year, in this edition as well, or are they going to stick to the generic GW sort of terrain suggestions to make it easier for everyone to adapt?
So I think there's probably, from what I've heard anyway, to answer WTC specifically, there's like a ideal world versus a practical world scenario, which is very reasonable in the sense that, you know, we are planning, it's going to be something like 128 tables or something like that of 40K terrain.
Teams of 8 people, so math, something like
that. 128, I think is what it, regardless, it's a large number of 40K tables. And the reality is that we have very little time to test lists and terrain, let alone manufacture terrain to actually fit the addition. And so I think there's a reasonable world where we get WTC terrain, slap some, like as it is now in 9th edition, slap some bases on it and say Bob's your uncle. And so it probably won't look anything like the Games Workshop maps, which from memory, too far, I've never played a game on a Games Workshop terrain map, but they look like the enormous squares in the middle of the table. Like the 4 really big squares. I don't think WTC will look like that.
I hope it won't look like that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Liam, I'll take a minute of your time because I need to announce something, and then we'll come back to, I have a couple more questions, but I need to announce something to our listeners, and that is, everyone, I would like you to know this, that Contact Lost, so myself and Joker, we are going to be in Belgium. I mentioned that already. We are going to be covering the WTC from where it happens. And we are going to do this in the form of a something like a sports studio. So essentially, we're going to be there for you for the first hour of the game, and probably the last hour of the game. And we are going to be accompanied by Nathan from StatsCheck, who is going to be doing the data crunching for us. And there's going to be Typhus, also from StatsCheck, who is going to be running around the field with his phone, sending us the latest info about the stuff that is going on. So you will be getting all the latest stuff, all the latest information from our studio. So make sure that you like, subscribe, follow, just click on that bell button and so on, because there is one more thing that we are going to be doing. And you all, Liam, you as well, could be really interested in that. And this is probably somewhere around, somewhere after the list submission time, Joker and myself, we are going to be doing the live group draw. So we are going to have, like, think of the UEFA style glass balls with, you know, a lot of balls in them. We are going to actually do that for you. So that's going to happen live on our channel, WTC channel, and so on. So stay tuned for that. I don't know the exact date yet, but that is definitely coming. We are going to be covering that as the official partner for the WTC. So make sure that you are there to see it. Make sure that you follow us and you get the latest notification when that pops up. And yeah, the series that we are doing right now, it's going to last until the very event. So the intention is to speak to the top 10 teams from last year, plus the four new teams, and if time allows, also the United Nations teams, because as far as I know, there are going to be two. So yeah. They used to be called mercenaries because they are like an assortment of individuals who either don't have a national team or didn't get selected but still want to go. So there is a lot to explore there, and we will try to do that as well. Sorry, Liam, for that. This brings me to my next question, which is there are four new countries at the WTC. South Africa, Israel, Cyprus, New Zealand. Are you prepared to face them? Do you know anything about them? Are you collecting intel about them?
New Zealand, yes, yes, and yes, because they are literally next door. But you know, for us, the New Zealand team are, you know, known operatives, so to speak. They came to the ANZTC, the Australian and New Zealand Team Championships, which is our equivalent of the ATC. And so, you know, I think we're aware of those players. We talk to them like they're mates. So yes, we're aware for that team. The other teams, I'm going to be honest, no. One of the things that, you know, I want to add a caveat there is that my strength as a 40K player is definitely not like my hardcore, my weakness. And it comes into my work as well, to be perfectly honest, is my memory for names is just like literally non-existent. And unfortunately, being a doctor, that's very problematic, but I'm Aussie, so I can call people mate, which is really helpful. But what that means is, for example, like I look at a tournament, especially an international tournament, and like, you know, I read names and I'm just like, I literally know zero of these people. And that's actually not true. Like a couple of them are people I've played, spoken to, had drinks with, and even like whole meals with. I'm just really bad with names. However, people like Matthew Morazzoli, for example, and our head coach this year, Denise, are really great info gatherers. They are people who can, you know, not just remember and know a lot of people internationally, but you know what lists they've played, know what factions they've played, know their success in singles or other teams tournaments. And so I trust in my ability as a captain to delegate the Varus spy network to other players, because I'll be honest, it's not my strength. I'm really bad at it.
So yeah, gathering intel is that important part of preparation for the WTC. To anyone who might think that it's not happening, wake up. It definitely is.
It is happening, but again, I think the weird part about 10th edition is that what intel is there to gather, right? You know, like there's
true that.
I'm assuming, right, that there are going to be zero team events between now and WTC where any of the WTC players reasonably play their army. Sorry, between now and list sub. I'm going to add that caveat because I am literally going to a team event the week after list sub down in New South Wales, where all eight of my players are going in two teams of four as sort of like a testing, but they're hiding lists until after WTC list sub. So it is what it is.
Yeah, Poland does the same thing. I think there is a tournament here in Poland that the Polish team is going to participate in together with Scotland, Denmark, Holland,
yeah,
and some other
great
countries.
Idea.
And it's also like lists are all hidden and so on just for testing, yeah, and stuff. It's incredible how the community has developed to come up with those ideas and so on. And speaking of community development, there is one thing that has been very prevalent over the last couple of years, I guess. Like, if anyone follows football or soccer, so the proper football, you would see and you would notice and you would understand that the level of information that you can gather from a football game, the level of data, the amount of data that you can gather from a soccer game is overwhelming. The commentator is the whoever is, you know, telling you what is happening during the game. They have such an insurmountable amount of information about every player, every team, what the ball is made of, what density of air is there in the ball, you know, shoe sizes, penis length, all that stuff. The same is coming to Warhammer. Like, the guys from StatCheck, for example, they gather so much info, they gather so much data that it's incredible that you can actually collect all this and collate this and present this in an understandable way. So that's a very lengthy and long winding way of asking the question. Are you using that in any way in your preparation?
No, I think it's the short answer. And sorry, I say no again. Not because I don't think data will be relevant. It's that I don't think there is enough sample size between 10th dropping and WTC for that data to have the veracity it once did. Like, for example, if we were playing 9th edition, we would be digesting that data, you know, hungrily, you know, down here in Australia. But from my perspective, you know, and I say this because of, like, me being self-deprecating to myself, that the data on Liam winning with Necrons, blah, 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 means nothing. Like, it's actually almost completely meaningless. The data that, you know, I have a go second win rate of like 88% or whatever also means nothing because the missions are completely different. Everything's changed. So I think that the data gathering is a really important part of teams and also international community building. Like, it's cool to have that kind of competitiveness with stuff like that. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your perspective, I don't think we have that for WTC because it's just too close to the edition dropping.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, there's not enough reliable stuff to actually take into consideration.
Too small a sample size, as they'd say in research. So
maybe, I mean, do your people use TTS in their preparation? Because, you know, all the TTS leagues, I guess they're kicking off pretty soon. So maybe that will be a source of
that's true.
Info.
So one thing I will say, and I've got to word this mildly carefully, there is a group of about six of the people on the Team Australia team who a bit smaller than that, who are putting together something quite unique this year, which I am really excited to talk about after WTC. Which will be quite instrumental in analyzing some of the data that you've talked about, that I think could potentially be a really big asset to the team. But I will say no more on that front because I don't yet know what it is. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, dig deeper into this. But what I would like to find out before I let you go is, again, it's not uncommon for teams to bring some extra staff with them.
Staff.
Meaning some extra people doing the work behind the scenes. You know, like there is a coach, head coach, I don't know who else, but I know that last year your team probably had like four extra people.
We
or
did,
something
yeah.
Like this. Poland, also a couple, but literally a couple. You know, running between tables, checking stuff, researching stuff, passing over water and so on. Sometimes even like very mundane, down to earth jobs, like, yes, giving a player water so he doesn't dehydrate in the very hot room. How many people are you bringing this year, if that's not a secret? And again, what role they might be playing?
We're bringing five this year.
Five. Wow.
So again, you got to remember that I think the real, you know, kings of this are the people who are coming as, you know, the coaching support crew. That's five people who are willing to fly over the entire planet to go and support eight sweaty nerds to play 40K.
And not play the game, just run around them, basically.
I'm strongly encouraging them all to play the Warmaster singles, so they will get something, you know, incredible out of the travel. So what role they play? So we found in the 2022 WTC that the coaching support staff were, we've always thought that those roles were important, but I literally think those are the linchpins of a team. I genuinely believe it. This is not like lip service or should go on a poster saying we want you. I mean it 100% in the sense that in the WTC, the rules for communication and talking amongst the team are very strict. Having more coaching support staff allows ease of communication to the captain and tracking him around. Leaving your table is a problematic and daunting prospect. Coaches reduce the likelihood you have to leave your table. Having at least four coaches means you can have one coach standing in between two tables. So that coach never has to move and is kind of like assigned a post, so to speak, where they, if the tables are all in a line, they can just stand there, look at both tables. I think it reduces the likelihood of anything untoward happening. It means you can go pee without, you know, worrying about the table. And probably, you know, also importantly, you know, water, food, things like that, that you actually need in these 4-hour rounds. It's pretty intensive. The last thing is that having that fifth person for us means we can have a dedicated person on scoring and tracking. So we can have coaches who are there to support the players and watch the games, and then a head coach who can actually coordinate and communicate with the captain in terms of like how to guide players if they're at points where they're not sure if they should push or play defensive or so on and so forth. I think actually having five coaches gives us a level of control over the round that I don't think we've ever had before. And also, Australians are freaking enormous. And when you see 13 of us at the pairings table, I think it's pretty funny.
Intimidating. But I know that many, many teams, will follow your example. I think Polish team is even bringing like a media guy this time because they came to the conclusion that actually, you know, playing the game, running around, and posting stuff on Discord it is actually too hard. So they have a dedicated person to do that now. Plus there will be us, plus there will be some, you know, other people. There are even people coming without a role that are just willing to travel to, you know,
just want to be part of it.
Cheerleaders for the team or something. So it's incredible how this thing is like bringing people together. Which brings me to one of the last questions of the interview, and then I'll let you go to actually, you know, prepare for work. Is your community, the Australian Warhammer 40k community very much like around the national team? Do people generally care about how well you fare? Maybe after the victory last year, how does it work?
So I guess my experience is kind of like mildly in an echo chamber, you know, because like, you know, especially as the captain and whatnot, a lot of my conversations with people are about WTC. So maybe I have like an artificial perspective on it, but I would say yes, very much so. Shortly after WTC, before I was even the Aussie captain or anything like that, I went to Western Australia, basically as far away from where I currently live as a human being can go in the same country. For the record, it's a 6.5-hour flight from one side of this country to the other. Anyway, so I went there and there was a vast swathe of people there who I'd not really met or had conversations with, even if I'd met them once or twice. And like lots of people congratulated me. Some dudes took a photo with me and you know, drank some beers, which I thought was awesome. And that's kind of persisted. Like, you know, people are pretty keen to talk and get involved, understand how Team Australia is going. But all of the anecdotal stuff aside, let's put some numbers to it, right? Because I think that how a country supports a national team in anything is a good indicator of how much support there is behind it. For the 2023 team, I kicked off a big fundraising drive because, you know, it costs about $60,000 to send a team to Belgium. It's a pretty expensive prospect. You know, that's like a house deposit. And so we did a fundraising drive where we, you know, called sponsors. We did a raffle. We've had from sponsors well over 20,000 Aussie dollars donated from some private companies, individuals, but also we have a brewery here who donated some cases of beer. Like, I know nobody at this brewery. I just sent emails and they were like, oh, Warhammer, that's sick. Mm-hmm. And they gave us some beer. So that was pretty random. We did a raffle where we've raised over $5,000 just raffling off prizes for the team, things like objective markers and stuff. $5,000 in raffle tickets for a Warhammer raffle. That only really pays for like one person to go. But I guess my point is that it's the greatest year ever for Team Australia community grassroots support, just in terms of dollars. people are willing to donate time, effort. You know, people have messaged me being like, hey, if you guys need armies built and painted for WDC, let me know and I'll get them done in a week. Like, you know, people, I'm really, I guess, emboldened by this idea that I don't feel like I have 8 or 13 dudes behind me, so to speak. I feel like I have like a whole country. It's really, really positive.
Of course, when the king reaches out to his
people, oh, here we go.
Why wouldn't they listen?
Work for me, peasants. No, it's
not like no, that. No, it's more like
it's benevolent king. It's really, really good, and I think more than any year that I've definitely been involved, I feel like this attitude that we're going back to defend a world championship title has been adopted by even the friendly players at your local gaming store. They kind of have this like this ethos almost that Aussies are the best in the world. Let's go back and prove it. But in a productive way, not in like an angry way. That mm-hmm. they want to be better. They want to get better. Yeah.
So in the name of the international community, I guess I can't say that to all the Australian people supporting you. Chapeau, and hats off to you because that's absolutely something wonderful, and I would like to see that in every single country that goes to the WTC at some point, you know, because it's
a really awesome feeling. I'm not gonna lie, and I've also found, you know, anecdotally in singles events and stuff that I've played since WTC, people's attitudes have shifted. Like in all seriousness, there's been quite a big, I think, mood change in Aussie 40K, because I think that now there's this sort of spirit of people aren't just saying they're good. You know what I mean? Like for I do think for a long time, you know, people have been like, oh yeah, like Aussies are pretty good at 40K. Now it's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, we can actually do things. Like, yeah.
That's fantastic. And then the last bit probably, and I will lead into you doing your plugs and so on. But the last thing that I guess is noteworthy, or has been noteworthy over the last couple of years, is like the advent of all the podcasts, YouTube channels, and so on and so on, where you can literally just sit down in front of your computer and hear, listen to Contact Lost and find out what Polish players are doing, what the American players are doing, Spanish, French, and so on and so on. The world, I think that's a quote from like in 80 Days Around the World, the world has shrunk. It's just way smaller. And the world of 40K has shrunk even more. So people play in international teams on TTS together. Everyone knows everything about everyone. So I guess it also contributes to how well you can do. And now, Liam, to finish off, and I'll let you go, is there anything that you would like to plug?
Very much so. Thanks for that. So I do a podcast, as you mentioned. It's called The Normal Blokes 40K Podcast. It's a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. The idea behind it is it's a couple of Brisbane locals, and we dissect new rules, talk about tournaments, our own experience. It's very rarely a super high-tech, in-depth stat or competitive analysis. It is geared towards people who want to become more competitive or who are already competitive and looking to improve. But it's always geared at we're going to explain a lot of things from kind of the grassroots up. So if that's something that interests you, please hit us up. A lot of it's smack talk and me just insulting other people. But I hope it's enjoyable. And the second thing is Team Australia is continuing to do its raffle and its fundraising drive. We are on RaffleTix. If you search Team Australia 40K on RaffleTix website, it is an online draw. It is at the moment Australia only. However, for reasons beyond my comprehension, the app allows you to just say wherever you are. So, for example, we have people from New Zealand who just said they live in Queensland. And if you win a prize and you do buy a ticket internationally, I will ship it wherever you live. So if you are enthusiastic, we have something like $3,000 of boxed 40K, 2 fully painted armies, some random cases of beer, which I don't think I can actually ship, so apologies for that one, and a variety of other prizes, including a moist handshake, which we are raffling off for a variety of different reasons. And any support, all support would be really appreciated. We can actually no longer say that we are the furthest traveling team. Unfortunately, New Zealand beats us by about 150 kilometers. But only the people in like south-ish New Zealand. There are some people in north that are, anyway, that's an argument for another time.
We digress. So thank you for that. So everyone who is interested in the Australian scene, the Australian lists Australian players, go and check out the Normal Blokes podcast. From me, as someone who is a podcast glutton, as I mentioned, I only recently found out that Hayden Waldock and Simon Gojkovic, if I pronounce that right, they run the Ethos Australia 40K podcast, which is amazing as well. And I strongly recommend that.
Yeah.
And our good friend Sam Lemon is also running, I think, a fairly fresh podcast, but like he's very energetic and he also invites international teams. It's called Wide World of Warhammer. So yeah. I strongly encourage people to go and check that out as well, because I've seen how much work that guy puts into his preparation. He digs out stuff and facts that I wasn't able to dig out, and that means something. So go and check that out as well. Liam, thank you. Thanks to your wife as well for, you know, giving you that time in the morning that you probably could have been spending together. I appreciate that a lot. And I guess I'll get to speak to you at the event.
See you in Belgium.
See you in Belgium. Thanks a lot. And until next time. Bye-bye.